Good afternoon, brethren. Good to be with you here today. Well, this is a special presentation here because you've heard all the talk about the halls that we've been looking into. So this very well might be the last PowerPoint presentation that you will see here in this hall at the Kiwanis. So it's a special thing. We'll see if that prediction is true or not. Well, let's start in Genesis 1. Verse 14, then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, for days and for years. Well, brethren, even the first graders among us, they can tell us some basics about our calendar. I have a first grader in-house. I tested him a little bit, and he could tell me some of the months and some of the basics of how it works. But oftentimes, we don't have a first-grade knowledge of the calendar that we use for God's holy day, for that holy calendar of His. And that's something that we should understand. Those are some basics that we should know so that we can be smarter than a first grader. Now, I really appreciated Dave Evans's sermon because ultimately what church is about and what our calling is about is transformation, growing in love, moving toward Jesus Christ, and that's what we come to church to learn about and to be exhorted to do. But at the same time, there are foundational issues that we need to understand. We need to know, why do we do what we do? Why do we believe the way that we believe? And it's important to prove all things. Even though this, you might not think this is as important as transformation, and definitely transformation is more important, but on the other hand, there are splits that occur over subjects like this. So we should have knowledge, maybe not of all the intricacies, but at least enough knowledge to know why is it that we keep the days when we do. So in that opening verse, we have lights in the heavens, and pretty much every calendar that man has is based in some way on those different lights. We have the sun and the moon. The earth rotates around, that gives us the day. It orbits around the sun, that gives us a year. And the moon can give us a month. So we know what our Roman calendar looks like with the 12 months in it and the 28, 29, 30, or 31 days. And we also know why do we have that February with the 28 or the 29 days, and that's because a year isn't exactly 365 days, right? So we have to make an adjustment every once in a while and put in that leap year. And that keeps the year in sync with the sun. So we have spring always at the same time, and that's good to do. You look at God's calendar, now you also see a set of months. All of the months on God's calendar start, they're tied in with the new moon. So the new moon takes about 29 and a half days to circle around the earth. And so you can see the length of all of these days. They vary between 29 and 30 days. It's about 29 and a half. And I put over here what our equivalent months are so that you can see that. Now, one challenge with having a calendar based on the moon, if you look in your calendar, you can see the new moon oftentimes on one day or another. They have it as a black moon, and it'll say new moon. And if you count in a year how many new moons there are, oftentimes there will be 12 new moons, but sometimes there will be 13 new moons. And that's because the length of the moon is shorter than a month, and so there are sometimes more than 12 of them. And likewise, on God's calendar, you have 12 months, but 12 months times 29 and a half days for the moon to get around there, that's less than 365 days. It's actually closer to 354. And so if we didn't make an adjustment, the calendar would drift back, and soon the spring holy days would be drifting back to the summer, and the fall holy days would drift back. Sorry, the spring would drift back to the winter, the fall would drift back into the summer. And so there is an extra month that is thrown in, just like on your calendar on the wall, you sometimes see 12 new moons shown and sometimes 13. Likewise, on God's calendar, you sometimes have 12 months based on the moon, and you sometimes have 13 months based on the moon. So this one down here, that is the 13th month. That comes in every 2 or 3 years. And there actually is a cycle. Sometimes it's every 2 years, sometimes it's every 3 years, and it's on a cycle that repeats every 19 years. And if you've been around in the church for a long time, you've probably heard of the 19-year time cycle. And I remember when I was a kid, we would hear about this, and some of the adults would make some speculations about how it might tie into prophecy, and it always frustrated me as a kid, because people would talk about this, but they would never say what it is or what the origin of it was. And I actually didn't know the origin until I started preparing for this sermon. So there's a cycle of those. It turns out that there's a cycle of 19 years. The first year, second year are normal years. Then you have a leap year. And then you have another 3 years. The last one is a leap year. And some clever person associated this with the piano and realized that if you take the white and black keys of the notes, it happens to work out to when you have 3 years and then a leap year, or 2 years and then a leap year. And so if you have a black note here, you have 1, 2, 3 is a leap year, and then 4, 5, 6 is a leap year. Here's no black note, so 7, 8. But anyway, it goes until year 19, and then it all starts again. And that is how the calendar works. That's how it has kept in sync all of these thousands of years up until our time now. Now, one thing about our calendar that we use, one thing that I love about the Church of God is what I call the desert island test. If you have a man and he's stranded on a desert island, he knows nothing about God, he knows nothing about doctrines, but he also has no preconceived notions about those things. And then a Bible washes up the shore, and he starts reading the Bible. He takes it out of the glass bottle that it floated up there in. What's he going to do? If he starts reading it and he gets his knowledge about God just from that Bible, he's going to end up having doctrines and beliefs pretty much like we have, right? He's going to believe in water baptism. He will believe in keeping the Sabbath. He will not keep Christmas, because that sure is not in the book. All sorts of other things that people have injected in there over history will not be in there. He's going to be pretty much doing what we're doing as far as doctrine. But the guy has a problem, because he's on a desert island. So he might come to the conclusion that the Sabbath should be kept. But how do you keep the Sabbath? That is, what day is it on? He's on an island. He doesn't have a calendar. He doesn't have radio. How does he know when the seventh day is? And likewise, how does he know if he sees, well, I need to keep the Passover on the 14th day of the first month, how does he know when the 14th day of the first month is? So the Bible doesn't have the instructions that he needs. It doesn't spell out and says, here's the new moon, and here's how you tell this is the first month, this is the second month. And so what does he do? Well, some other information is needed. Somebody needs to come along and provide us that other information. We're in the same boat that he is in some ways. The Sabbath, we know it was right back when Moses gave it. Of course, the Sabbath goes way back before Moses. It goes back to creation. But how do we know that in 300 BC, the Sabbath that was kept 3,000 years ago is the same Sabbath we keep now? How do we know the time wasn't lost? Well, we do know, because God chose some people to entrust certain things to, and that is to the Jews. We have the Old Testament that we have now because the Jews faithfully preserved it. With their scribes, they carefully wrote out every word and every letter. They destroyed the copies where even one letter was wrong, and we know that they faithfully preserved that. And so we have the Old Testament today that we do because of their faithfulness and because God used them. And also because of them, we know what day the seventh day is, because they've been keeping that same seventh day since it was handed down from Sinai. Since they left Egypt and were reintroduced to the Sabbath, they have kept it. And so Paul talks about that in Romans 3, verse 1. What advantage then has the Jew, or what profit of circumcision? Much in every way, because to them were committed the oracles of God. And so those oracles include the Old Testament. They also include that timing of the Sabbath, that seven-day cycle that they've kept for thousands of years, and it also includes an understanding of how the calendar works, and when is the first day, when is the first month. They know that because they have been there doing that. You know that the Israelites, they divided into the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. And the kingdom of Israel, they went into captivity, they stopped keeping the Sabbath, and they lost their identity. Many of us have forefathers that were in that group. They lost their identity. Most of those people still don't know who they are, but the Jews kept the Sabbath and they kept their identity. Ezekiel 20:12 talks about that, that the Sabbath is a sign, and they kept that sign. And so we know, we have that information because they had those oracles and they preserved those oracles for us. So you might say, well, the Jews, they're not really believers in the same way that we are. They had a chance to accept Jesus and didn't. They don't have the Holy Spirit in the same way. But nonetheless, God still used them. Let's look at Romans 3, verse 3, the next verse. This is talking about using an imperfect vessel for conveying those oracles. What if some did not believe? What if their unbelief make the faithfulness of God without effect? Certainly not. Indeed, let God be true, but every man a liar. So in other words, God can preserve his oracles even if the vessel through which those oracles are preserved is an imperfect vessel, because God can do that. So let's go back to a time when Israel was first, well, they were reintroduced to God's way, because they lost a lot of things when they were in Egypt, but they came out of Egypt, and now God is explaining what he expects of them and explaining the worship system to them. Go to Numbers 3, verse 6. Bring the tribe of Levi. Try to get rid of this thing here. Or what that is. Bring the tribe of Levi near and present them before Aaron the priest, that they may serve him. And they shall attend to his needs and the needs of the whole congregation before the tabernacle of meeting, to do the work of the tabernacle. And they shall attend to all the furnishings of the tabernacle and to the needs of the children of Israel to do the work of the tabernacle. So a special subset of God's people were entrusted to do particular things relating to the worship. Verse 9, and you shall give the Levites to Aaron and his sons. They are given entirely to him from among the children of Israel. You shall appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall attend to their priesthood, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death. So in other words, there were certain aspects of the worship that were entrusted just to a subset of the people, the Levites and the priests, and nobody else was to mess with it. And God was very serious about that. Also in Numbers 18:23, only the Levites may serve at the tabernacle, and they will be held responsible for any offenses against it. If you look at the complete Jewish Bible, it says they will be responsible for whatever they do wrong. So in other words, issues with that worship, the temple worship, the tabernacle worship, is exclusively their jurisdiction. If they botch it up, it's on them, basically, is what it's saying. So, moving along, getting back to the calendar, we understand that the months start with the new moon. So the question arises, what is the new moon? Now, there is a standard that was given to them as Levites, because in addition to what they were supposed to do in the temple, they were also given knowledge of when they were supposed to do those things at the temple. When were they supposed to blow the trumpet and announce the appointed feast? So we know it's related to the new moon, but what exactly is a new moon? So here are different phases of the moon that you can see here. And the moon is colored white on the side that's facing the sun, and it's colored black on the side that's facing away from the sun, because the moon gets all its light from the sun. So this moon over here looks full to us. This moon over here looks new, or looks black, because you can't see it. No part of the moon that is bright is exposed to the Earth. Or you can look at it a different way. This shows what does the moon look like from the Earth. So when it's away from the sun, it will look full. Over here, it will look like a half moon. Here, it will look new moon. And here is where you just barely see the crescent. So this would be the new sliver of the moon in the sky. Now, there are those who don't accept the standard that was given and that was passed down by the Levites. And they go off and they'll speculate, well, what exactly does it mean for new moon? Astronomically, if you ask NASA what is a new moon, it's going to be right here. In other words, right as soon as the moon passes between the Earth and the sun and goes a little more, it's now new. It started its new orbit. But nobody can see the moon at that point. After all, if you're standing here in Africa and you're looking up in the sky, you're going to try to see this moon, but you're going to be staring into the sun. You're going to go blind trying to find this moon. And the other problem is, just like you know there are stars above us right now, we were out in the parking lot, you can't see any of those stars because the moon is overpowering everything else. So even if you didn't go blind and the moon were over here, so in theory there's a little sliver that you can see, it still is not going to do you any good because it's just so bright from the sun. So different people have looked at this and they've come to different solutions. So there are people who are defining things in different ways. And some will say, well, here's the new moon here. Some will say, well, here is when I can first see the crescent, and so that's the new moon. When I look out my backyard and I see that, that's the new moon. I'm going to start my month with that. But the problem is, you in your backyard are going to see it a different way. You're in a different part of the world. You and I are going to come to different conclusions. And woe to you if you're in Indiana and the last 2 weeks you haven't even seen the sky because it's rained every day, you're going to have some trouble. And astronomers tell us that even if the sky is clear, there's going to be a period of up to about a day and a half where the moon may or may not be visible. So it can take up to a day and a half from this point before you can see it. Sometimes you can see it right a couple hours later. Sometimes you have to wait until the next day to see it. And so if you don't accept the calendar-based rules that were passed down from the Levites that the Jews have now, you open up the door to 1,000 different possibilities in defining all these things for yourself. And that's a challenge. One time that we really can see the new moon right when it's happening is right here. This throws people off, but this is an eclipse, and that thing right in front of it, that's the moon. And when it gets out of the way, that's the new moon. It's pretty easy to figure out. Strangely, though, a lot of people who believe in observation don't consider that a legitimate new moon, even though it's quite obvious that the moon has passed by the sun and is starting its orbit again. So, as far as defining when the new moon is, not only do we have the issue of people in different spots seeing it differently, some will say, well, some spots are better than others. Jerusalem is where you have to look. And there are actually issues with how far out Jerusalem goes. There are, like I said, there are people who have split over this. And there are groups that believe they need somebody in Jerusalem before the Feast of Trumpets to see when they can see the moon. And there was actually a group, George de Campos, related this story, and he said they sent a man over to Jerusalem to watch the moon, and he saw the moon, and he phoned back to the group, and some in the group decided that he was on the wrong side of the mountain, and that was not a legitimate spot for looking at the moon. So the problem is, when you get rid of the standard that is passed down, everyone has his own standard. You have 1,000 different standards. And so it's a real problem. And the verse that comes to mind for me is, God is not the author of confusion. And it is confusion if you're only allowed to see the moon from a certain city, especially when were the holy days given in Leviticus 23. Where were they in Leviticus 23? They weren't in Jerusalem. They had another 40 years of wandering before they even could get in there. So, what do we do? You know, what is the standard? How does it work? Well, turns out there is one standard, and the standard has been passed down. The Jewish scholar Sadia Gaon, he was in the 900s AD, and he wrote a book, and he mentioned that he says it's well known that even in biblical times, the calendar rested on a system of calculation. And another Jewish scholar, Abraham Finkel, he said the calendar calculations were passed down in an unbroken chain going back to Moses. Now, we know that in Christ's time, there were people who were doing observation. And the question is, were they doing observation in order to confirm the calculations, in order to make sure that the calculations were done correctly and that there was no discrepancy? So they had that unbroken chain. Now, that chain was disrupted in around 358 AD. So you had that chain. The chain took the form of the Sanhedrin that was around in Christ's time. But in 358 AD, there was more and more persecution. The Jews were getting more scattered. And so the head of the Sanhedrin then was named Hillel, Hillel II. And he took the step to publish the rules. There had always been rules, but he decided to publish those rules because he reasoned, we're all going to be scattered, we're going to be killed, and we're no longer all going to be in one spot. And so the Jewish people need to be united and all keep these days at the same time, regardless of where they are on the earth. So that is the first time that those rules became public information and were not just guarded by a small group among them. So he didn't invent the calculations, but rather he made them known to everybody. So I have one verse that I think got out of order. Let me make sure. Let's look at Leviticus 23, verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, these are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their appointed time. Who is he talking to? If you look, God isn't talking to everybody. He's talking to Moses. And you remember what we saw. You have Moses, you had the Levites, and they were in charge of that. So God was putting them in charge of proclaiming the feast at the appropriate time. And there's another verse I'm having trouble finding, so I'm just going to read it to you. And that is Matthew 23, verses 1 through 2. Matthew 23, 1 through 2, Christ says, Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. So they were in Moses' seat then, and in 358 AD, when they made that publication and let everybody know how the calendar worked, what the rules of it are, they were also in Moses' seat. And at that point, they were disbanded. So I don't know who would be in Moses' seat now, if anybody, but that was basically their last act. So part of the rules of the calendar are called dehiyot, which in English we call the postponements. And they are rules of determining when that new moon is. And in particular, we care about the new moon right before trumpets, Tishri. And that is the day that all the other days of the calendar are based on. When you figure that day out, then all the others fall into place. And so these dehiyot, these postponements, they determine when that first day of the month falls, or what day is the first day of the month and what day is still the last day of the previous month. You might notice when you go to the feast has an uncanny ability to always seem to fall on a Monday or on a Thursday or on a Saturday. That's not a coincidence that it doesn't fall on a bunch of other days. It falls on those days on purpose because it's designed to do that. Because built into the calendar system is a mechanism of avoiding a bunch of double Sabbaths. Sabbath requires a preparation day, especially back then, and especially the Sabbath of Atonement. All the other Sabbaths, it says, don't do servile work. But Atonement, it says, don't do any work of any kind. So imagine you have Atonement on a Friday. So you've prepared for Atonement, you've fasted on Atonement, and now, finally, the sun's gone down, we can eat, but we don't have a preparation day to eat because the preparation day was Atonement. And so now, what do you do? And so one of the rules is when the conjunction, that is when the new moon occurs, depending on where it is, it will be put, the new, that is the first day of the month will start in such a way so that those double Sabbaths are minimized. The other rules are things like if it occurs after this point in the day, then the new moon will be that next day. If it's early enough in the day, then that day itself will be the first day of the next month. And those are the rules that make up the calendar. So I don't like the word postponement myself because it implies that there's a system and then someone is tinkering with the system by moving things around. But the postponements are not changing the rules. The postponements are the rules themselves, and that's how it has been. So, how about at the time of Christ? What did Christ do? We know that Christ kept the right dates. He was Christ. He was sinless. So he would not go and keep things on the wrong day. So, what did he keep? Did he keep the postponement? If we know that he did, then that's great. We know that we're on the right track. But what does the Bible say about postponement? That's the problem. There is, though, some evidence that points to postponements being in use at the time of Christ. And I'd like to go over that. What you see here are various years in around the time of Christ's death. There's a certain amount of disagreement. Did Christ die in 30? Did he die in 31? We in the church have traditionally taught he died in 31 AD, and so I have some candidate years for you here, and then I have three calendars. So this one on the left here, that is the calendar that we keep in the Church of God and that the Jews keep, and so I labeled it calculated with postponement. So it follows those rules from the Levites all the way down with these postponements, or at least allegedly. That's our system. This next calendar here, this is the same thing, but without those postponements, because there's a school of thought among people that they shouldn't have them. And then over here is an observation calendar where you look up at the sky. And I could actually have 100 other lines because, like I said, if you believe in observation, there are 100 different ways to do it. But the blogosphere being what it is, this is the hot calendar nowadays, the observation one, this particular version of it. So I put it up here. So how can we look at these? Do we have any clue from the Bible about that can guide us toward the right choice, A, B, or C? Well, it turns out that we do. We know from the church and from the Bible, this is way beyond the scope of this sermon, but we know that Christ died on a Wednesday, and he was resurrected on a Saturday, right? Christ is our Passover. He was slain on the Passover. What comes after the Passover? A Sabbath, right? The first day of unleavened bread. We know that he died right before the Sabbath, and he was resurrected right after the Sabbath, and a lot of people who don't know the holy days, they think, oh, Friday to Saturday. But we know 3 days and three nights in the grave, right? That he said that was the only sign he gave that he was the Messiah. So we don't have time to talk about all that, but we understand that he died on a Wednesday. So if we look at all these possibilities, we can highlight all the ones in which Christ died, or which Passover falls on a Wednesday. So in the calendar that we keep, that's 30 and 31 AD. In this other calendar, you get to 30. On the observation one, you have 28, you have 31. So that's nice, but that doesn't give us a whole lot of insight. It gives us one data point. But we can continue on. There's more that we can learn. We can go back a year to the year before Christ died, because that was a very memorial and very special Feast of Tabernacles. And that occurred in John 7. That was the feast where he sent his disciples on ahead because he knew that the Jews were trying to kill him, and he actually snuck into Jerusalem. You read John 7. And that was also the time that he gave that famous address here in John 7:37. He said, on the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and he cried aloud, saying, if anyone thirsts, let him come unto me and drink, talking about the living water. So, he continued on, and he stayed that day. So he went up to the Mount of Olives that same day. Other people went home and came back. He was at the Mount of Olives. So now verse 2 of John 8, that is now the day after he gave that sermon. Now early in the morning, he came again to the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. And that was when he was presented with the woman caught in adultery. That was when he talked to the Jews and he said, before Abraham was, I am. He shocked them all. And then going into verse 9, that's where he healed the blind man. And so then you see this statement in verse 14 of John 9. Now it was the Sabbath. So that is an interesting indication. That means the day after he gave that speech, that was the weekly Sabbath. So if he gave the talk on the seventh day of the feast, you now have the next day, and that's the Sabbath. If you come back here, I have this labeled as trumpets, but you probably have all realized, maybe not, but the Feast of Trumpets is always on the same day of the week as the first day of the feast, and it's always on the same day of the week as the eighth day of the feast. That's just how it works, the first, 15th, 22nd day of the month. So, if we take that eighth day as a weekly Sabbath, we can update our chart here. So again, we're talking the year before Christ died, his very last feast. So, on which days, or on which years, does trumpets and those other days fall on a weekly Sabbath? On these. So now we have another data point. So now we can do some connecting. What we're looking for now is a Passover that fell on a Wednesday, like the scriptures teach us, and a trumpet the previous year that fell on a Saturday. So over here, for example, here's a Wednesday and here's a Saturday, but that's in the same year, right? The Feast of Tabernacles, that was the previous year. So that doesn't work. Over here, you have a Wednesday and a Saturday, but it's the same year. Over here, we have two together, and so if you take this Saturday, that's the year before, you can connect it with that Wednesday. And so this works on the calendar system with the rules that we have. It does not work on the system of observation, these other two. And again, there are hundreds of observational calendars, but the one that is all the rage on the internet is this one here. So, moving along, I have a couple other things about the calendar. One is that the calendar is out of sync. Now, the calendar is actually an amazingly accurate calendar, and it wasn't until our modern time that our calendar became more accurate than God's calendar. In fact, you remember in the Middle Ages, the Pope had to rip out 10 days from the calendar to get it back in sync with the seasons because it had drifted during that time. Now, that Jewish scholar that we quoted before, Avraham Finkel, he says, he's talking about the calculation of the calendar, and he wrote, "The calculation of the calendar was transmitted to the sages in an unbroken chain going back to Moses. According to the ancient calculations, the exact time between one new moon and the next is 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 parts of an hour." And the hour, they divided it into 1,080 parts. So their lunar month was 29.53059 days. So nowadays, NASA has told us that they were wrong. The actual lunar month is 29.53058 days. So they're off by 2 millionths of a day. So, yes, the calendar has moved a little bit, but it hasn't moved enough correct. The thing is, if you have a monthly calendar, you can't throw an extra day into the calendar because the calendar is based on the new moon. And if you add a day, well, the new moon's still going to come at the same time. You can't move the moon, right? So it's going to automatically go back to where it was. The only way you can really correct the calendar or move the calendar is by adding that extra leap month. And so we can add a leap month or we can withhold a leap month after the calendar accumulates 30 days of drift, but we're not there, and we won't be there until long after Christ has returned in the millennium. We have a couple more thousand years before the calendar would need correction. So it seems like it was designed to last as long as mankind, destined to be around as long as, at least if my speculation on Christ's return is correct. I'll say it that way. So another myth about the calendar that we use now is that the Israelites got their calendar from Babylon. And you know the Jews went into Babylonian captivity, and Daniel was there, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they were in there for 70 years of captivity. And some say, well, they were corrupted there and they came out. And it is true that the names of the month, those months that I put up before, are Babylonian in nature. So they got the names from Babylon. But think of it this way. God put his people into captivity, and he didn't abandon them, right? Remember, Israel, they got lost. They lost their identity. But the Jews did not lose their identity. God led them out. He worked with Ezra and Nehemiah, and they went back and they rebuilt the temple. God was still actively working with them and directing them on rebuilding that temple. So do you think when they reconstructed the temple and they rededicated the temple that he would have allowed them to use a corrupted calendar? I would say no, he wouldn't. Especially when you remember the story that they had to figure out who the priests were and they were all looking at their lineage because they didn't have the temple for a while, and some people came and they claimed to be priests and they turned out to be Amalekites. And how did they determine that? They used the Urim and the Thummim, right, which is the tool that God gave them, and they still had the Urim and the Thummim. They still had God working with the people. The Bible was still being written. And so, for me, the argument that they got this bogus calendar system that we've inherited doesn't hold water. So, we also have the thought that the calendar depends on somebody watching the sky in Jerusalem. And again, I would say God doesn't give us an unobservable calendar system. So when the Romans drove the Jews out, that they didn't lose their ability to keep the holy days because they lost their stake of ground in Jerusalem. And likewise, in the wilderness, they didn't have any issues. It wasn't an unobservable system. And likewise, the keeping of God's calendars does not depend on 20th century, 21st century technology, where you send someone to Jerusalem and he sends you an email back that says, "Hey, I've seen it," right? That didn't exist, but God has a worldwide work, and his people are all over the world. And yeah, we have the luxury of setting up a webcam, and we could be right there and see, but that's not something that the whole world always had. So, another one, one I didn't put up here yet. Another myth is that the leap month is determined by walking through the barley. Now, you may think that's funny, but bear with me. The month of Abib is the first month, and Abib means green. It's the month of spring. It's named after everything turning green, and the barley turns green. And so we know that we need to put in a leap month sometime, that if you don't have the standard from the Levites, from the Jews, when do you determine that that leap month is going to happen? Well, someone said, well, the month means green, barley turns green in the spring, so if barley's not green, let's throw in an extra month and wait until the barley is green. And you can do that way, but again, you're making your own standard. You can, if you want to go by what the Bible says, the Bible doesn't say that you should send somebody through the barley in Jerusalem or anywhere else. What if the barley is good over here but not here? What if there's a famine in the land and there's 2 months without it, or it doesn't exist for a whole year? How many leap months are you going to throw in? We have a 14th month or 15th month. I don't know what people would do in that case. And the argument has been made, well, God told them to sacrifice some barley, so we need barley for the sacrifice. So if there's no barley, we're going to throw it in next month and we're going to wait. But he also said to sacrifice sheep and oxen. If the Philistines came and stole all that, that would also be unobservable. So I would say that the idea of moving the calendar around based on the crops, you can't turn to a scripture in the Bible and see that, I would say. So another thing that is said about the calendar is that it's too complicated. And if you look at these rules, it's talking about, well, if the conjunction of the moon is here, then the first day of the month is the following day, otherwise it's this day. And the rules are complex, but just because it's not simple doesn't mean it's not godly. And if you've read the parts of the Bible in Leviticus where it talks about how the priests sacrifice all these animals and they have to sacrifice this on this day and this on this day, and oh, by the way, if you get it wrong, you're going to get struck dead. They actually had the high priest, when he went in to the Holy of Holies, he wore a rope on his leg so that if he botched up and God struck him dead, then someone else wouldn't be struck dead trying to get out the first guy's body, right? It was a complicated system, but it was still a godly system. It was the system that God chose to give them. And we still don't understand all the details and the meaning of all that. I'm sure that it does have meaning, and we understand some of it, but God chose to give them that complicated system for a reason that only He knows. And likewise, He chose to make it a whole lot more simpler when Christ came and died and became our sacrifice. Worship became a lot simpler. But you can't just say, well, this is a complicated calendar, so it's not a godly calendar. So for my last scripture, Psalm 133, verse 1, "Behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." Brethren, we need to know why we believe what we believe. We don't necessarily need to know all of the mechanics of it and all the names of the month, but we should know, why do we have this system, or why do we do the same thing that the Jews do? Now, others have gone off in different directions, others in the Church of God. They're still God's people. They need to follow their conscience, right? Because whatever is not of faith is sin. But it's so much better if we hold to the faith once delivered, look at what has been proved, revisit those things. God entrusted those oracles. He entrusted the Bible. He entrusted that 7-day cycle of the Sabbath to that group who have been keeping it ever since. And He also entrusted those rules of how the calendar is calculated to them. and they sat in Moses' seat. So every few years, it seems like something like this goes around the church. Sometimes it's sacred names saying you should only address God using a certain name, using a Hebrew name. You shouldn't call him God, like in English. People go on off on tangents, but they're still God's people. And I love all of you, and I hate it when God's people are divided. I hate it every time there's another split and a disagreement on something. And so it's my prayer that we can all have a common belief on our doctrines, on the foundational things that we believe in, so that we can all dwell together in unity.